Hello, and welcome to Catholic Answers Live on this Memorial Day Monday here in the United States. If you're listening here in the United States, maybe you're listening for the first time. Maybe you're usually working at this time or something. So hello, and I'm glad that you're here with, or maybe you're traveling. Probably a lot of people on the road. And so welcome. Catholic Answers Live is a product of Catholic Answers, which you can find at Catholic.com and find out all about the Catholic faith there. What we do is explain and defend the Catholic faith. And then we also do this radio show where occasionally we do other things like talk about movies, which is what we're going to do today, because in the U.S., Memorial Day is really kind of the beginning of summer. There's, you know, as astronomical or cosmic, or I don't know what the modifier is, summer. And then there's, like, you know, summer, the way you have had it since you were a kid. And that always traditionally in the U.S. was Memorial Day to Labor Day. It ended on Labor Day with what used to be a very important American tradition called the Jerry Lewis Telethon, but I don't think we have that anymore. I don't know if we have that anymore. So Memorial Day is a day where we remember. Basically, we remember those who have given their lives in the service of this country, and in many ways, certainly over the last century, in the service of this country's service to world peace. And, you know, you think of the U.S. Navy patrolling the seas, or all the many goods that the U.S. military people have done. But most particularly in defense of this country and out of love for others. Thomas Aquinas famously puts soldiering under the virtue of love, because it has to do with love of others, defending others, protecting what is valuable and good and beautiful. And out of love of all those things, putting one's own life and limb at jeopardy. And so today we remember all those who gave their lives in the service of the country. And, you know, as Americans, the way we remember things is we have foods. And so hot dogs, I don't know why, but like at Thanksgiving, we give thanks to God with a turkey. That's just how we do it. And so it's a lot of hot dogs and hamburgers and that kind of thing today. And we get ready for the summer, and summer means movies. And we're going to talk about movies for both hours today with Andrew Petiprin. And it's always a lot of fun to get to talk with Andrew Petiprin. And it's kind of fun to talk about movies too. This is the where our culture expresses itself. Popular music and movies are the main thing. Well, television too, I suppose. So let me introduce you to our guest for this conversation of summer movies. Andrew Petiprin is the founder and editor at the Spe Salvi Institute. He's a columnist at Catholic World Report and host of the Ignatius Press podcast. He's a former Episcopal priest who came into full communion with the Catholic Church with his wife and children on January 1st, 2019. So give him a break if he's still getting used to this Catholic thing. I mean, 5 years, it seems like a long time, but you're still the baby in the Catholic faith. He's the co-author of the book Popcorn with the Pope, A Guide to the Vatican Film List, and the author of Truth Matters, Knowing God and Yourself. Andrew Petiprin, thank you very much for being with us.
Glad to be with you, Si. I am. I'm just a baby Catholic. I really do appreciate everybody's guidance. You know, well, that's the thing. We're all converts, right? I do like to point that out.
Yeah.
But I'm a newer one.
If you're alive in the faith, you're a convert. There is no being alive in the faith without conversion to the person of Jesus Christ. So that is the truth. So you said, I'm new to the Catholic Church. Let me make a book about the Vatican film list. How'd that happen?
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of people don't even know about the Vatican film list, and I didn't know about it really until I approached the task of writing the book. I was working for Word on Fire at the time, and there were a couple of guys who had this idea to write this book. One of them was Father Michael Ward, who's a Catholic priest in England. He's a great expert on C.S. Lewis. Maybe you guys know his work. Really great stuff. And the other one is David Paul Baird, who is a Catholic writer and an all-around great guy and good thinker. So they had an idea to write a book about the 45 movies that were on this list called the Vatican Film List. This list came out in 1995. Kind of out of the blue. It was a work of the Pontifical Council for Social Communication, and it was meant to mark the 100th anniversary of the motion picture. They came out with this list, 45 movies, three different categories: religion, values, and art. They divided up a bunch of movies, and they put out the list. All these years have passed, almost 30 years, and no one has ever written a comprehensive book about all the movies on the list. So these guys, Father Michael and David, they asked me if I'd be interested in participating with them, and the three of us divided up the movies and decided to write this book. And it's been a big success. It's a beautiful book. And for anybody who's watching the feed, I know lots of people are listening, but I'm holding it up right here. Really, really handsome book. You can buy it anywhere you buy your books. And it's full of interesting movies that you can go out and watch if you haven't watched them.
And
it's good stuff.
These are movies that the Vatican listed because they thought that they were treasures, really? Is that the idea, to find treasures in the 100 years of film?
Yeah, kind of. It's still a little bit of a mystery why certain movies are on the list and why certain ones aren't. It is definitely not meant to be like an exhaustive list. Like these are the 45 movies we like the best above all others in the history of cinema, or these are the ones that, you know, you should watch, and maybe most of the rest of what's on offer isn't worth your time. In some ways, it's just kind of like a little, I don't know, like a thumbnail sketch, and it's divided up in, it's mostly organized by director, and, you know, it follows kind of the what we call the auteur school. Like, basically, you know, the director is a kind of artist, right? The director is the one who kind of takes the ideas, takes a script, has a vision for what a movie is going to look like, and then puts it out there. And that's still kind of the method that we, the kind of the model that we look at today. But it used to be more of a studio system where it didn't matter so much. The director was just kind of a hired gun and was just kind of there to kind of put the actors in front of the camera and stuff like that. So on the Vatican film list, you have, like, for example, two movies by the Russian director Andrei Tarkovsky. You have two movies by the Italian director Federico Fellini. You have two movies by the Danish director Carl Theodor Dreyer. And it just kind of goes on and on and on from there. And now, did those guys make more than two great movies? Yeah, they made many, many more than two great movies. But it's like the list is sort of saying, these guys are masters. You know, they're making masterpieces. Here's two movies, right? So that's part of the way the list works. But then the list also includes all these sort of other things, like, for example, Stanley Kubrick's 2001 A Space Odyssey, and Frank Capra's It's a Wonderful Life. And, you know, Fantasia is on there. And, like, The Wizard of Oz is on there. So there's all these other kind of things that are just sort of movies that everybody acknowledges are interesting or important or entertaining or something, but also, you know, convey something deeper about the human experience. So there's just all kinds of stuff on there.
Oh, that's so interesting. And so in the book, you just take a look at each of these movies and discuss them and what, and kind of put them in their context, what they mean.
Yeah, exactly. Each chapter is about, it's about an 800 word, like, you know, kind of summary and examination of what the movie is about, what it's good for, maybe places where the movie intersects with important elements of our faith. But then we also have discussion questions. So you could use the book as, like, maybe if you want to have like a parish cinema club or something like that, or even just in your family, you can use the questions as like a jumping off point to think about the movies and maybe their spiritual significance. We also have lots of really beautiful still photos from the movies in there. And we have little, like, factoid tidbit, like little boxes with, like, you know, movie trivia. That's one of the things I love, Si. I don't know about you. Like, when I go to the movies, I love to get there early and watch, like, the pre-movie. You know, sometimes they'll have, like, little trivia questions or something like that about movies that you can sit there in your seat while you're...
I'm terrible at it. You know, terrible. So you're probably really good at it. I'm terrible at it.
Well, I'm pretty good at it, but my wife is amazing at it. She's actually the real cinema expert in our family. So, yeah, we have fun.
I need that time to cool down after I just spent $73 on Diet Coke and popcorn. I need that time to mellow out before the movie. Do they not know what the prices are in the rest of the world? Are they not aware that they are on a completely different scale inside the movie house than outside?
Yeah, it's totally crazy. But I mean, you got to think of it this way, though, Sal. Si, the movie industry is in bad shape. It's in really, really bad shape, actually.
Okay.
And they are doubling down on, you know, this sort of high level entertainment value, where now, you know, when you go to the movies, you always have the reclining seats. You notice that there are far fewer seats in a movie theater than there used to be.
Like, right.
They're much more spaced out. They're banking on people buying the concessions, and they're hoping that people are going to go there because they want to see, like, the big IMAX. They want to hear, like, the big sound, maybe even the seats rumble or move or something like that. Honestly, that is not my favorite thing about going to the movies. I don't really care about a lot of that stuff. I love going to the movies because I love the collective experience. I love being with other people and experiencing art. And actually, some of the big, you know, high budget, high intensity movies that kind of dominate movie theaters nowadays are not really my favorite kind of movies. I like them fine, but I kind of miss the days where you could just kind of, you know, they had all kinds of different movies at the movie theater and you could, right. you might have kind of a dingy seat. It didn't recline, but you know, you were there watching it on the big screen.
I want to ask you about the Flannery O'Connor movie in just a quick sec, but because that's something I'm sure many of our listeners will be interested in. You've seen the new Flannery O'Connor movie.
I have. Yes, I have.
All right. So we'll get to that in a sec. But I just want to ask you, in a certain sense, why bother with movies at all? I mean, there's been such a destructive effect of mass media. You can see the connection between the rise of mass media, and that's radio, and then movies, and then television. And, you know, the advent of the mass media age has been a disaster for human beings. It is an utter disaster for human beings. So, I mean, it destroyed families, it destroyed people's understanding of themselves, it destroyed religion, And we pretend like, you know, there's all these advances, and there are many social advances, but it's utterly devastating to culture. Why do we even care about movies? Why don't we just turn the whole thing off?
Yeah. Well, we probably should be more judicious about what we are watching and maybe watch fewer things, but higher quality things. But what you're expressing, Cy, is very much something that the church was concerned about, that Pope Pius XI was concerned about in the 1930s. When cinema going just completely exploded and it took off as by far the most popular form of entertainment. In 1930, 60% of American families went to the movies every week.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Wow.
Crazy statistic, right? But at that time, the church was like, what are these things? What are these movies? Is it just bread and circuses? Is it really going to destroy souls and destroy families, right? And so there were good reasons to think that, because all these years later, we see that has happened to some degree. But what also happened with the motion picture was, in the couple decades after that, in the 1950s and 1960s, it became really clear that movies could also be among the highest expressions of art, and that they were actually capable of showing to man in his fullest dignity and therefore kind of in his greatest God-givenness. So this is where then the church started to rethink what movies were for, that there was still a ton of horrible mass media stuff. And in as much as a movie is just a kind of piece of entertainment, it's probably not good. But in as much as it can be a piece of art, like, you know, the great art from the past, like, mm-hmm. you know, like Dante or Michelangelo or, you know, whatever, Victor Hugo or whatever, you know, whatever you want to, whatever kind of artistic medium you want to point to, then it has the potential to really elevate the soul. Even where it's gritty, like, for example, we'll talk about Flannery O'Connor in a minute, but even where it's sort of showing the shadow side and the kind of darker side of human existence, it still has an ability to kind of shock man in a good way. This is something actually Pope Benedict talked about in his pontificate, the idea of like shocking man out of his complacency, and sort of it has a way of kind of bringing him up and helping him transcend everyday reality. So the movies, I think at their best, have a way to do that very few other expressions of art can do in the same way, because the motion picture is just so powerful. The visual image is so powerful, and we know therefore it's also really dangerous. So it's a two-edged sword, but there are ways, and that's one of the things we hope for in the book, to kind of steer people in the direction of places to look where you can really get something more than just your kind of typical content, right? Typical just mass media.
Okay. All right. Well, then I want to ask you about that Flannery O'Connor movie then, because Flannery O'Connor, if not the most beloved, certainly one of the most beloved Catholic writers. And I say, I mean, I don't know that she would like that categorization. I don't know. But she is beloved by Christian people, particularly by Catholic people, because her writing is it's about being us in the modern era. And she did it so well and with such unbelievable humor and all that. So we'll talk about that right after the break. I'll ask you about the new movie about Flannery O'Connor. Because the other thing about Flannery O'Connor is many people have said, well, her work is unfilmable. Like, you can't make a good film of it. So let's see what you thought about the new Flannery O'Connor movie right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Catch Catholic Answers Live anytime at Catholic.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
The most original and exclusive Catholic content is on EWTN Radio.
Human beings are God's greatest masterpiece. Every person is made in the image and likeness of God. But every saint, that is, every person who accepts God's invitation, his upward call to make them holy. And so every story presents us with a unique masterpiece that God is writing.
The Journey Home, tonight, 8 Eastern, on EWTN Radio and television.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. Summer season is starting. That means movies. And so we're talking movies. We're going to talk summer movies. We'll talk other movies and run the whole gamut a bit with our guest, Andrew Petiprin, who is, a very serious and well-prepared Catholic mind who engages with this stuff all the time and so has done some wonderful work, including the book Popcorn with the Pope, A Guide to the Vatican Film List. But you used to do a podcast or a YouTube channel. I'm not sure how you would categorize it, called Watch With Me. I don't think you're doing that anymore. But this is a real passion for you, film. So yeah. Have you ever read any Flannery O'Connor? Have you ever read any of her stories?
I have. I love Flannery O'Connor, and I came to her stories late, actually. My mother was an English teacher for 40 years and always loved Flannery O'Connor. Actually, my mother was born in South Georgia, like Flannery O'Connor, but I had never read Flannery until around 2016, 17, something like that. So sort of just before I became Catholic, and I was totally blown away. I had wrongly assumed that Flannery was kind of, surely she was good, but she couldn't be that good, you know? But she is that good. She is just that good.
Well, if your mom tells you it's good, there is a certain, like, okay, mom, thanks. I can't remember who is. It's like the genius is always unique. You can't categorize it. Whatever you thought it was going to be, once you encounter it, it's something so much more than that. All right, but her stories are difficult. They're dark. They're terrifying sometimes. I guess you told me at the break it was John Huston who made that movie Wise Blood out of her short novel Wise Blood. It was just a horrible movie. So not a lot of people lining up to do Flannery O'Connor on film. So tell me a little bit about this new Flannery O'Connor movie, what it is, and if it's worth watching.
Well, the new movie is called Wildcat, which is the name of one of Flannery's short stories. And it's directed by Ethan Hawke, whom everybody will probably know from things like Dead Poets Society, Training Day. You know, he's a very well-known actor, obviously. And his daughter, Maya Hawke, who was in, she was in Stranger Things. She's been in a number of movies now. She was in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. She's terrific. She is she's a rising star. I think she's absolutely great. And she is just terrific in this movie as Flannery.
It's surprising that she's so good coming from the gene pool she comes from. I mean, coming from, you wouldn't expect beauty or talent from the daughter of Ethan Hawke and, tell me her mother's name.
Uma Thurman.
Yeah. Yeah. Both brilliant actors and tall and beautiful. And okay. So clearly Maya Hawke is at every disadvantage here. But surprisingly, has emerged from that a great talent.
Yeah, she's from Hollywood royalty, but she's proving to be worthy of the crown, I suppose.
Good for her. Good.
Yeah. But to answer your question, it is very much worth watching. The one of the issues is where and how to watch it. It has been released. It is playing in some movie theaters right now. But it is not in widespread release at all. So for most people, I mean, I was really fortunate. I got an advanced screening copy and I watched it and wrote a review of it. But most people will probably have to wait until it starts streaming, which we hope will happen pretty soon. Okay. But for anybody who can watch it on the big screen, like, for example, where I live in Dallas, Ethan Hawke, who directed it, is coming to Dallas and he's going to do a talk and a screening at a local theater here. And he's been doing that in a number of cities. So I would recommend if anybody has a chance to go and do that, to do it. Because this is definitely a movie worth seeing on the big screen. It's a really beautiful movie. And to your point before about how difficult it is to film Flannery's stories, the way that they achieve it in this movie is it's a biopic, but only partly a biopic. So it's a movie about Flannery, but it's also a movie that interweaves some of Flannery's stories with Flannery's life. And Flannery, Maya Hawke, who plays Flannery, also plays the female protagonist in the stories. So like in Good Country People, for example, which is the one famously, not to give anything away, but it's about a kind of intellectual young woman with a fake leg. She plays that character in addition to playing Flannery, the author of that character, right? And her mother, who's played by Laura Linney, also plays kind of the mother character in the short stories as they're filmed. So I think it's really genius because, you know, it's a way to present to an audience a bunch of Flannery's best short stories, but then also tell the story of Flannery's life. All of which, by the way, in my opinion, totally does justice to her deep Catholic faith. Without making it sappy or saccharine or anything like that. I mean, it really makes it clear that she believed deeply. And the tumult that she experienced was she really didn't know whether she could tell the stories that she wanted to tell and still be considered a good Catholic.
Oh, really?
So she's kind of struggling with that in the movie. And it's wonderful. Yeah.
I'm so glad you said not saccharine or sappy, because I think that would deeply offend Flannery O'Connor if you portrayed her faith as something sappy or saccharine. I think she's, and you'll excuse the language, but I think she's most famous about proclaiming her Catholic faith by saying, if it's not really Jesus, then the hell with it. And I think that's, she was tough. She had a tough mind. She was not, she wasn't sappy or saccharine.
Yeah, there's a part in the movie, actually during that scene, there's a great kind of sequence in the movie that takes place in the home of her writing teacher at Iowa, where she studied writing. And there are all these, all these aspiring writers there. They're all intellectuals. And this is where they set that famous conversation. I'm not actually sure if that's precisely where it did happen in reality, but that's where it happens in the movie, where she says, you know, if it's just a symbol, then to hell with it, about the Holy Eucharist.
Oh, yeah.
But she also says, during that conversation, she says things like, I prefer not to tidy up reality. Things like that.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's Flannery O'Connor. Wow.
Yeah. But then, when she gets back to Georgia and she's talking to her, you know, like her family and friends back in Georgia just don't understand why she wants to write all this dark, creepy stuff. And they say things like, why don't you write nice stories like, you know, like Gone with the Wind? She just is having none of that. She wants to tell a completely different kind of story.
Yeah. Yeah. And my understanding, Ethan Hawke has made some films that grapple with religion in a mature way. And God bless him for it, because there are very few people in that world that seem willing to do that. People almost have to be from outside of that world to do it. And I don't know if the word is Hollywood or what you would call that world, but I just think he should be congratulated and supported if he's going to grapple with religion in serious ways in film.
Absolutely. He's really done us a service, because unfortunately, Cy, a lot of movies that are that in some respects get the faith part right are not maybe artistically sophisticated enough. They're a little too facile, a little bit too simple sometimes. And Ethan Hawke he's hit both both targets. Like he has created a film that is very, very good for people to watch if they want to be strengthened in their faith, but also a movie that is complex and that, you know, deals with kind of the nature of humanity and reality in a way that we need to face. And that's true to Flannery, right? I mean, that's what Flannery was all about.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, Ethan Hawke and Maya, his daughter, have both said in interviews about this movie, Wildcat, that even though I don't think either one of them is Catholic, I'm not really sure if either one would even identify as Christian. I'm not really sure about that. But both of them have said that reading Flannery has so far in their lives, for both of them, been very important in their religious journey, whatever that may be. So, hey, let's just hope that journey continues, right?
So Wildcat is one you'd say go see. You thought Absolutely. They pulled it off. Well, good for them. We'll talk more about summer movies. Andrew Pettiprin is our guest. And what a nice way to spend a Memorial Day afternoon talking about movies with Andrew Pettiprin and eating hot dogs. Darren, run out and get some hot dogs. I don't have any in here. All right, right back.
Why We're Catholic is the one book you can hand to anyone to invite them into or back to the Catholic faith. With more than 400,000 copies sold, Trent Horn's book has had a number one ranking on Amazon.com for 5 years running. Now available in softcover, bulk cases, ebook, and on Audible. Find out what the excitement is all about. Order your copies of Why We're Catholic at shop.catholic.com or visit whywearecatholic.com.
When the resurrected Jesus appeared to disciples on the road to Emmaus, they didn't recognize him until the breaking of the bread. The same is true today. In the Holy Eucharist, we really meet Jesus. In The Eucharist is Really Jesus, author Joe Heschmeyer explains how knowing Jesus in the Eucharist is the key to understanding all of Christian faith. Order your copy of The Eucharist is Really Jesus today at shop.catholic.com or get it at a good Catholic bookstore.
If you're not a Bible scholar, the full message of how the Sunday Mass readings fit together can be tough to comprehend. Apologist Carlo Broussard is here to help. Join Carlo every Friday for the Sunday Catholic Word Podcast. In each episode, he unpacks the scripture readings for that Sunday and brings them all together so you can better understand and defend the faith. Visit SundayCatholicWord.com to subscribe. That's SundayCatholicWord.com.
Are you scared to talk about abortion? Don't worry, almost everyone is. You can overcome this fear as Trent Horn shows in the newly revised and expanded second edition of Persuasive Pro-Life. With a little knowledge and a few proven techniques, you can become a bold and effective apologist for life. Visit shop.catholic.com to order your copy of Persuasive Pro-Life and never again be afraid to speak up. Also available at good Catholic bookstores. Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, and a happy Memorial Day to everybody here in the U.S. And if you're listening around the world, this is a holiday here in the United States and usually kind of signals the beginning of summer. The kids know school is out soon. And although I don't even know if we do that. Do we have summer vacation anymore? I don't know how school works in America anymore. It just seems – look, this is the way I believe that the Lord intended school to work. You get out for the summer. Now, I'm obviously an old man, and maybe I'm just a cranky old man, but you're supposed to get out for the summer. I don't know what all you people are doing with all these going to you get out in June, you go back in September. That's how school works. What's the matter, America? How did we forget this? Andrew, at least you're nodding your head in agreement with me.
I agree completely. We don't have an adequate appreciation for the benefits of leisure anymore.
Yes.
We need to recover that.
I don't think the summer months of you know, digging in the sand and hunting crabs and all that stuff that I spend as a child are wasted at all. I believe those are the times that form the soul, that the soul is formed by the sunshine and the wind and the water and animals and all. Just get outside, do things, you know? We're too busy. And kids, this addiction to, you gotta well, what are our benchmarks for the summer? How about we not have any benchmarks for the summer? How about we just not have any and see how that goes?
Yeah, I agree. Plus, when are you going to watch all the movies? You know, you need the summer for that, too.
Oh, yeah. All right, I'm going to put you on the spot here then, because young people under the age of 30, I want you to think about young people under the age of 30, maybe teenagers, people in their 20s, maybe even younger than that. I think they see a film in black and white and they think it's not for them. So I didn't prepare you for this. But I want to ask you, if you said to them this summer, watch one film before the age of color, pick a film before the age of color for young people to watch where they can see that before, you know, all the explosions and the graphics and the CGI, there were things worth watching in movies. Can you pick a before the age of color movie for them to watch?
Well, I would pick something really funny probably to start. There are so many great classic comedies from the black and white era. I would pick maybe like a Marx Brothers movie, like A Night at the Opera or Duck Soup, and put that on. But, you know, and then get into more serious stuff maybe. But what's the problem with black and white? I don't understand the objection that people, like, they just think it's not worth.
My wife tried to, I remember when our kids were little, she said she wanted them to watch Lassie, you know, because Lassie is something we watch. They were horrified that she had the thought they should watch something with no color in it. Maybe I'm talking out of school about my children, but they felt that color was a basic human right and that this was somehow a violation of their basic human rights to have to watch Lassie. All right, but there's another problem, though, with the Marx Brothers movies for young people today. They're very verbal. And yeah. I don't know if young people are comfortable with that much. Do you see what I'm saying? If you don't like language, if you don't like words, you're going to have a hard time with Groucho Marx.
Yeah, you're probably right. But there's so many, I don't know, there's just so much to look at. So many, you know, whether it's like, you know, Harpo's hair or, you know, just Chico doing ridiculous things like, or people falling down or, you know, there's all kinds of stuff to look at in Marx Brothers movies that I think it would draw people in. But you're absolutely right, especially Groucho. I mean, and maybe that's all the more reason why we need to kind of get young people hooked on things like that, because boy, we need a better appreciation of the richness of language and language as I like to talk a lot about how, you know, we want words that convey the word, and you know, movies at their best are able to do that, to have the word with a capital W in the stories.
So Duck Soup for the kids this summer, if the family decides, because this Duck Soup is one where you can pop the popcorn, sit down and watch it and enjoy it as a family. It's funny that I said that about language now that I'm thinking about it, when one of the three Marx Brothers never says a
it's
word. I don't know why I went. By the way, I don't like to correct people on air, but you are a film sophisticate, and you made a horrible error, Andrew.
Oh no!
You just made a horror. Chico.
Oh, Chico! Right. You're right.
We would say Chico, but they said Chico. His name is Chico Marx.
You're absolutely right, Chico, and. Yes, Chico, and but I do know that Groucho's mustache is actually magic markered on his face. You can't tell from a distance, but it's actually not his real big mustache.
And Dumont, what was her name? The woman that was always the foil for them.
Yes.
Margaret Dumont, I think.
Yeah.
And the funny thing when you watch the movies is apparently Margaret Dumont actually didn't know why the Marx Brothers were funny. She was one of the people who didn't get it. She was like, I don't know what all this is about. What's going on here? So she was kind of typecast maybe. All right, let's talk about summer movies. First of all, are there any summer movies you're looking forward to this year? You're like, I can't wait. There's the new fill in the blank coming out.
Well, there's nothing I'm super excited about. Sai, I think I probably will see Furiosa, the Mad Max.
Really?
The new Mad Max movie. Yeah.
That's the last movie I thought you were going to pick. Yes. Tell me about that.
I am a big fan. I don't have high hopes for this particular movie, actually, but I am a big fan of the original Mad Max movies. For anybody who hasn't seen them, they're these dystopian movies directed by George Miller, an Australian director, starring Mel Gibson, the original three. The first one is called Mad Max, the second one is called Road Warrior, and the third one is called Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome. They're kind of 80s classics, and they are, in my opinion, just extremely well made. They tell really good stories about kind of one man's, you know, one man's journey. It's kind of, you know, it's a redemption story. It's also kind of a, there are these little notes of grace amid basic, you know, amid a landscape of despair. I think it tells a really good story that even, you know, Christians can look to and find some inspiration from.
Our COO, I will tell you, here in the building, John Sorensen, says Beyond Thunderdome is the greatest movie ever made.
He loves.
Now, I might be putting words in his mouth. He may not have said greatest movie, but it's definitely in the top.
That's the one that's got Master Blaster, and Tina Turner's in that one.
Yeah.
So we'll have to talk to John about that. But, you know, recently there was, several years ago, about a decade ago or more, there was a new Mad Max movie, Fury Road, which I thought was also really excellent. I thought it was very good. But there's this new one. They're just going to keep going, you know, and so far so good with this franchise. But they're going to do another one starring Anya Taylor-Joy, who is generally an actress that I like pretty well. But I don't know. We'll see how it goes. I think they're going to run out of gas eventually. Actually,
running out of gas is one of the themes
of the movie. But anyway, yeah.
Okay, let me just push back on you a little bit, because I don't understand this. I mean, the original Mad Max, leave them aside, those are different things. But this recent movie that they made, and people talked about how great the movie was, what was great about it? Like, just explain to me what was great about it, because it was a movie about driving, basically, and trying to kill each other while driving. I don't get it. What's great about it.
Well, I mean, all of them are about driving to some degree, but yeah, this one kind of takes it to a whole new level. And I mean, I love it because it makes us think about these, you know, sort of vying, you know, imagining ourselves in kind of the worst case scenario, with something horrible happening to the world. How would we get on with things? And so each of the Mad Max movies sort of tells a story in that vein. You know, Fury Road being the first one that isn't just about Max himself kind of, you know, finding himself in a situation where he can move from one place to another, helping one group and then disappearing again. That's basically his MO before that. But, you know, and in this one, in the last one, the Fury Road, the problem is water as much as gasoline. And, you know, there it spurs contemplation, I think, about what matters in life. But I don't know if the new one is going to hit the same notes. We'll see.
All right. Fair enough. But when you look ahead and you see these lists of the movies that are coming out, you're not looking at the summer with much excitement.
Not really, Cy. No, I mean, most of the new stuff that comes out, at least that airs that goes to the theaters, is sequels, reboots, you know, stuff like that, which, you know, it's okay sometimes, but I think we're getting a little thin now. But I don't know, were there any that stood out to you? I'm actually trying to remember what the list is for this summer.
Honestly, there's nothing. You're right. Like, I don't have, I remember for the winter, I was really looking forward to Dune 2, the sequel.
Yeah.
And there's nothing like that this summer, nothing like that. I think a lot of people will be looking forward to Wolverine and Deadpool, because these are two, beloved characters, but I'm one of those people that likes superhero movies, but I've had enough. Mm-hmm. They've defeated me. No more superhero movies. I can't take it anymore. Just make a regular movie. Make something normal.
I hope that Hollywood is starting to hear that from more and more people nowadays. I think we've kind of reached the end of the road with superhero movies essentially being the movie industry. I think maybe it's time to try something else. Tell more human stories again, and let's see if people will give them a try.
Yeah, and there were, you know, like, I think Robert Downey Jr. is one of the greatest actors in the world, and that when that first Iron Man came out, that it was brilliant. Jon Favreau is a brilliant director. The whole thing was... And then we spent 20 years addicted to that. It's like Robert Downey Jr. and Jon Favreau just ruined 20 years for us.
Yeah. I think, and you're absolutely right about Robert Downey Jr. I think he's an absolutely fantastic actor, and he rightly was rewarded for the role that he played in last summer's blockbuster Oppenheimer.
Oh, I know.
Which to me was just a return. I mean, I found myself thinking, I really wish Robert Downey Jr. hadn't given his prime to playing Iron Man 15 times or however many times, you know. I mean, it was fine. I loved the first couple Iron Man movies, but after a while I kind of felt sad for Robert Downey Jr. Like I really would have loved to see him spend the best years of his career playing better roles, but you know, so it goes.
Yeah, he's a billionaire. So don't feel too bad for him.
He's fine. He's
doing
happy.
Okay. Robert Downey Jr. is doing okay. But like even back to Chaplin, I loved him in Chaplin. And I think that was before all this. I thought this, I mean, physically, there are, you know, that kind of use of the body that Chaplin was capable of. There's not many actors that can do that. And I thought Robert Downey was just brilliant doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I think he really is one of the great, great talents of his generation.
All right, we'll talk about some movies we should watch this summer then. And we'll go into the vaults because since Hollywood is apparently not going to give us great movies coming out, we'll go into the vaults and talk about some things that you should put on. Everybody's got a TV that's as big as a movie screen nowadays. Some people have TVs as big as a movie screen in their car. That's... I don't know what that says about our culture, but like you see, you look in some of these cars you're passing and you're like, how much? I'll buy a ticket, drive me around and I'll watch movies in your car. But let's see what with the families and folks might get out for this summer that'll bring real pleasure to the family and real viewing value while you're munching that popcorn right after this with Andrew Pettiprin on Catholic Answers Live.
This is Archbishop Paul Coakley, the Archdiocese of Oklahoma City. And you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Who was the first Catholic in your family? Were they evangelized by a friend, a coworker, a stranger? Did you ever think that you could be that person that God uses to save a soul? And that soul could save their family, their grandchildren, and generations to come? At St. Paul Street Evangelization, a Catholic nonprofit, we train, equip, and mobilize Catholic disciples to do the urgent work of evangelization. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization, streetevangelization.com.
This is Jim Pinto, Director of EWTN Media Missionaries. EWTN Media Missionaries prayerfully take EWTN to parishes and the community through the print and electronic media we provide. You can help EWTN share the good news by becoming a media missionary. Visit EWTNmissionaries.com today and join us in sharing the eternal word with the world.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Our guest is Andrew Pettiprin. This hour and next, we're talking movies because it's the beginning of the summer movie season here in the U.S. and around the world, even though I know it's not summer everywhere. Some places, I don't know if you know this, Andrew. I don't know if you know how geography works, but in some places, it's winter now, not summer. We're coming into the winter.
Down in the Southern Hemisphere,
yeah.
I'm told.
Oh, you are good. Yeah.
I've never been to these far-flung places.
I didn't know you were a trained scientist, but okay. Yeah. But I guess, I don't know. I never asked when I was in Australia, like, do they call it the winter movie season? Like, but they got to get all the same movies we get. So we're coming into the winter movie season down there. So we're going to talk about some movies. Andrew Pettiprin, I've already introduced him, but you should check out the Space Salvi Institute. We just put Space Salvi. And I'm interested in why you... Space Salvi is my favorite... I don't know if you're supposed to have favorite papal encyclicals, but it's my favorite papal encyclical of all time. I love Space Salvi. So why did you... What's the Space Salvi Institute? Why did you start that?
Yeah, thanks for asking about it. So the Space Salvi is also certainly among my favorite papal encyclicals also. And it's a great encyclical by Benedict XVI. It's on hope. Space Salvi means saved in hope. And hope was one of the great themes that ran throughout Pope Benedict's writings and was a theme that he explored a lot in his pontificate. A colleague of mine and friend, Robert Mixa, he and I decided to start this little venture called the Space Salvi Institute, precisely because we were inspired by the vision of hope that Pope Benedict lays out in that encyclical, basically not asking us to be Pollyanna-ish, not asking us to be just sort of blithely optimistic. We can be negative about negative things that are going on in the world. We don't want to wear blinders or pretend that things are good when they're not. But we are ultimately living with the goal of heaven, which therefore then informs life in this, you know, life on this side. And that means that we create, that we appreciate, that we enjoy the blessings that God has given to us. And so we wanted to start this little venture. We have a website, we have a podcast. We're going to be starting to do some in-person events, maybe some conferences in due course, where we explore not only the virtue of hope, but we talk a lot about art, we talk about cinema, we talk about a little bit about politics, a little bit about culture, a bit of this, a bit of that. But what we're really interested in is Christian civilization, Christian society. The Wonderful. Idea that maybe we could resurrect that idea. We're not giving up on it.
Praise God. Yeah, don't give up on it. All right, so give us some summer movies. Let's start with baseball. Baseball is the summer sport here in the United States. Any good baseball movies we should watch this summer?
There's so many good baseball movies. And, you know, there are different camps about baseball movies. I don't know where you fall. Some people really...
All of them
really...
except the Kevin Costner ones. Come on, Kevin. How many baseball movies can you make? No, I'm just kidding. I'm sorry. That's not true. Go ahead. What are the camps?
Well, you've actually named one of the camps. There are people for whom Field of Dreams is the ultimate baseball movie. Now, I like Field of Dreams a lot. I think it's a really great baseball movie. Is it my favorite baseball movie? No. I think it's definitely worth watching. It's a great summer movie. Check it out. I happen to like The Natural quite a lot. That's Robert Redford playing a kind of aging rookie ball player. It's got a little bit of a dark side, a little bit of an edge, but it's got the great scene at the end where, I won't give it away, but it has to do with a bat and a special bat. Anyway, I really love that one. But my favorite baseball movie, honestly, is The Sandlot from 1993. Do you know that one, Cy?
It's a genius movie because I don't want to step on you, but it captures childhood summer as well as baseball, both of them perfectly.
Yeah, that is why it's so beautiful. It's a kid's movie. It's a kid's adventure movie. There aren't enough of those. I don't know if you remember, there used to be lots of kid's adventure movies. There was E.T., there was The Goonies. I may have talked to you about this on your show before, but
no, I don't think so. That's a good point, though. Kids out there exploring for themselves. Getting into
solving problems on their own, not running home to their parents, right? I mean, and sometimes, like in The Goonies, for example, saving their town, right? And there's a similar thing that kind of happens in The Sandlot. They don't save their town, but, you know, they get themselves into a pickle, actually, you know, to use a baseball analogy there. They use that throughout the movie, and they have to get themselves out of it. And it's just a wonderful movie about growing up, about boys being boys, about kind of exploring, you know, adolescence and, you know, all the kind of hardships and all the kind of joys that come out just by like hanging out. You talked before about summer, like where has summer gone? When you watch that movie, it seems like the kind of thing that lasted forever. And then suddenly it was over and you just couldn't even believe it. It was such a drag, right?
Yes. Yeah. The horror of back to school shopping. Really?
Yeah.
We're doing this now? I have to get clothes? So The Sandlot is one that a family could watch now. They could put that on with the kids and have a great night watching The Sandlot. And it's not just another superhero movie. The Natural. So Field of Dreams, what is it that you don't like Field of Dreams, or you just don't
think it's... Oh, no, I like it.
Yeah.
I like it. I to me, though, it's touching for sure. Mm-hmm. I don't love, what's the name of the actress who plays Kevin Costner's wife in that movie? I don't love her. I don't want to make this about individual actors and actresses, but there are a few flaws in that movie in my humble opinion. But, you know, the part at the end, I don't know about you, Cy. I lost my father. He died last year. And when I think about the kind of the scene where Kevin Costner's character kind of gets to play catch with his dad again.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, those of us who have lost a parent, like what we wouldn't give to like have another opportunity to kind of have that bonding experience again. It's really wonderful and touching. But is it my all-time favorite baseball movie? No. I think to me, like something like The Sandlot is just so much fun. You know, another one is A League of Their Own. I don't know if you've seen that one about the girls' baseball team.
There's no Madonna, crying in baseball. Yes.
I say that to my kids all the time.
I think that's the high point of Rosie O'Donnell's career, too. I think she's fantastic. Fantastic in it.
Yeah, and Tom Hanks, of course, you know, as the kind of, you know, crotchety manager of the ball club. But it's fun. You know, John Lovitz is in it. You know, there's a lot of fun in that movie. So to me, that says summer. Fun baseball. Love it.
We've got the Olympics coming up.
Yeah.
Any movies for the Olympics?
Well, the all-time great movie is Chariots of Fire, of course. Now, that one isn't fun in the same way as The Sandlot. But for my money, that's a movie I could watch every day. Any time of year.
Really?
But I love Chariots of Fire. I love it. To me, it's a beautiful movie. You know, we've got the familiar soundtrack.
Yeah.
It's the characters are so well drawn. I think the character of Eric Little and the character of Harold Abrams are just two like flip sides of the same coin of humanity. Mm-hmm. You know, there's the striver, Harold Abrams, the man whose whole existence is defined by his success. And then there's Eric Little, who does everything because he can't help it, because God gave him the gift and he wants to use it. He can't not use it. And both of them grow and change throughout the course of the movie. But it's the one I just have always identified with those two characters. And I just love that movie so much. But it's a great summer movie because it's set during the Olympics. And, you know, funnily enough, though, Si, like the Olympics is something that I used to always look forward to when I was younger. It just seemed like it defined like every fourth year. It's like, oh, is this an Olympic summer? It's like now I feel that way about the World Cup. Like, oh, is this a World Cup summer? Because I love soccer. But I don't really follow the Olympics anymore. I don't know. But there was a time when we did, you know?
There was a time when the Olympics was a big deal. And I think the image is tarnished. And there's been a lot of controversies about the Olympics. There's been a lot of cities that hosted the Olympics that were profoundly hurt by, like, they just end up in terrible financial trouble. And the whole thing started to have the slight stench of a scam to it.
Well, the old kind of cult of the amateur seems to have disappeared. You know, it's all just, it's all kind of cheapened now.
Yeah. Any other sports movies for summer?
Let me think. You know, I love Breaking Away. It's a great movie about cycling, of all things. A bunch of kids in a small town in Indiana, like, who get addicted to riding bikes.
Chris Check probably tells me twice or a few times a year I have to watch Breaking Away, and I still have not watched it. He's the boss here. And have you watched Breaking Away? And I still have not watched it. But it's worth it. Because I'll believe you. I don't really believe Chris.
I love Breaking Away. It's another great kind of coming of age movie, summertime. Like, what do we do with our spare time? Let's ride bikes and just explore our town. It's great. Yeah, okay. I love that one. I love The Karate Kid. That's not strictly speaking a summer movie, but some of it takes place during the summer. But it's a movie that for some reason I identify with summertime. Just a kid trying to make his way in the world, finding something to do, you know?
Yeah.
Karate.
I'm trying to remember the karate. I do. I mean, everybody remembers the standing on one leg thing, but I remember liking that movie, but I don't know if it made too much of an impression on me.
Oh man, maybe it was just my age when it came out or something, but I remember just as a little kid watching that movie and loving it. And I moved around a lot when I was a kid, and it's a movie about a kid who moves from the East Coast to the West Coast and doesn't know anybody out there, and he gets kind of bullied at school and he has a lot of problems, but he meets this old man, Mr. Miyagi, and he finds his purpose. He finds his meaning. He finds something that he can do with himself. It's a nice coming of age story.
Oh, all right. I have to say, and I don't know if it's on your list of summer movies, maybe because I'm older than you, the movie that gets me like that is Jaws. Not just as a shark movie, but as a movie that, again, it's like Sandlot to me. There's two themes of Sandlot: baseball and summer. And there's two themes of Jaws, the shark and American summer, what it's like to have the summer off.
Jaws might be, you know, if you Google a list, you know, best summer movies, Jaws is going to be at the top of most of those, and rightly so. That is a great, great summer movie.
That director, I think he's got talent.
I think he
shows something in that movie. You look at that and you go, well, there's something different. He really pulled something off there. Maybe we'll see more from him in the future. We got to take a very quick break. We're going to continue talking about summer movies. We got a lot more. We've got faith movies to talk about, movies for young people, some classics to talk about. And then a couple of your favorite directors. We'll talk about Alfred Hitchcock and a man I am not very familiar with, Eric Rohmer.
Eric Rohmer, yes.
Eric Rohmer. All right. All right. Thank you, Chico. We will be right back with more Catholic Answers Live, talking movies with Andrew Petiprin right after this.